Welcome to the Talking Transformation podcast. I'm your podcast host, Peter Ahmad, recording from Cape Town, South Africa, since June 2019. The Talking Transformation podcast provides an open and accessible platform for built environment professionals and interest groups to share their reflections and aspirations relating to the transformation of places and spaces in South Africa. It's intended to be a celebration of the individuals and community groups who are supporting formal and informal processes that are addressing the challenges of South Africa's history and shaping the future of our neighbourhoods and cities. In the second of our podcasts recorded at the ESRI Southern Africa User Conference, we're joined by three highly innovative and motivated individuals. The three guests in order of appearance are Vuyo Navari from ESRI Southern Africa, University of Johannesburg master's student Nsovo Pearl Maluleke, and IT tech entrepreneur Tsidi Morabi from the Janini Consulting Group, representing the STEAM for Kids initiative. My three guests were amongst the highlights of a packed program of experts and innovators showcasing their thinking and approaches, using GIS to shape opinions and inform their decision-making within both the business and public sectors. You'll first hear from Vuyo as he describes his journey from rural South Africa to urban professional and GIS practitioner. It's a truly inspiring conversation, and one which again reminds us all of how fortunate we are to find the work and do the work that we do, and to remember the importance of providing platforms and opportunities for the youth to grasp and take advantage of. I certainly have a feeling that we'll be hearing a lot more from Vuyo in the future. In a similar way, the ESRI Hackathon winner, Pearl Maluleke, demonstrated the power of marrying ambition with innovation. As a planning master's student within the University of Johannesburg, she reflects on how her winning hackathon competition entry helped her solve complex operational and sustainability challenges relating to waste management in Johannesburg. This line of inquiry and the solution she developed led to the judges awarding her with a monetary prize of 30,000 rands for her solution addressing the optimization of routes and ensuring equity in service delivery within that waste management space. And last, but certainly not least, Tsidi Morabi, an experienced practitioner who has worked within the IT field for many years, who has turned her attention and gifts to the STEAM for Kids initiative. It's an amazing initiative which seeks to build competence and skills within young children in relation to coding and robotics. I was completely blown away, completely inspired by Tsidi's passion, her belief, ability to demonstrate the potential of 4IR, the fourth industrial revolution, to support South African children to become better informed, better skilled, and transformed in a way that I had never thought possible, or for that matter, had ever contemplated. What happens when you start to inspire a new generation of children from the age of 5 to work with and be competent in not only the coding that goes behind so much of the app-based technology that we use, but also the robotics in relation to our automation of houses, businesses, and the ability to fix that which is broken, devices like our cell phones and other electronic devices. The potential for entrepreneurship and world-class innovation across South Africa suddenly becomes unlimited. These were the three speakers who truly inspired me most in what was an overwhelming program that inspired and encouraged all who were in attendance on each and every day, each and every session. The three guests reminded me that transformation is not only about the space that we occupy, but the way we go about growing our thinking and leaving our comfort zone. Going far deeper into the educational and vocational spaces, that was one of the biggest lessons I took home from the conference. It's a very different conversation to the first episode. I'm sure you'll find that this is about young people and practitioners dreaming and in some instances winning big. It's also recorded just before the annual awards dinner, and so there was a great deal of excitement in the room. I hope that the enthusiasm and the fun nature of the conversations that were recorded shortly before that awards dinner shines through in the recording. Thanks again to our three guests and the ESRI team for making me so welcome and allowing me to go in depth with a number of their own staff and some of the guests to understand a bit more of the behind-the-scenes stories and opportunities that unfolded. And as always, I hope you'll enjoy this episode as much as I did recording it. So it's the third night. We are about 10 minutes away from a big party, if I'm not mistaken, Buyo. A huge party. Buyo is dressed to the nines here. He's looking the part and he's really looking forward to going to the awards evening here at the Esri South Africa User Conference. Buyo Nivari, what an absolute pleasure. You and I had the chance to share a stage this morning at the conference. It was a really special time and a very inspirational story that you shared with the full house of delegates, 500 and more people. Mm-hmm. Tell me about your story with this YES internship program that ESBE's been running. Where are you from? How did you plug in? And how's your journey going, sir?
I think, first of all, let me just thank you. Those little two words that you put in every now and again. You got this. You're going to do this. You're fine. That was beautiful.
Thank you, sir.
That was beautiful. Just to get into my story, it's actually a very funny one. So where I come from is like the very deepest ends of Limpopo province in Thohoyandou. Growing up, we see these things, but we never really get too attached to them. So we just see them, and then most of us end up getting stuck with that village mentality that says you can't get out. Nobody tells you you can't get out, but that's how it's usually structured. But then my dreams were a bit different because my parents pushed me a lot. My parents were teachers, are still teachers, and my mother was a geography teacher, actually, because now she teaches primary, but she's still so proud. Every other time she calls me, she's like, oh, my GIS application son. My story started off in those deep rural villages of Thohoyandou in Limpopo. And then after my grade 12, I, like every other kid, I was like, no, I have to run to vets, I have to do all these other things and be, and I had beautiful marks actually in grade 12, some 3 distinctions. I go to vets and they're like, you're good with this though. I will give you 10,000 just to add to your fees. But then my dad was like, hey boy, I don't have enough for vets. So then I had to turn back, go to the University of Limpopo where I enrolled for a BSc in geology. Started off there, and then that was not. I think it was the vet's edge. I was like, no, I have to be at vets. My dad is like, no money. So I was like, no. So TEF didn't work out. 1.5 year, I dropped out and then went and did my license like any other dropout. After the year ended, I enrolled again at the University of Venda. For now, an honors Bachelor of Earth Sciences in Mining and Environmental Geology, which is a 4-year honors degree. So we did that, and that was lovely. And now I was back home and excelling, and because I was a bit more comfortable, and I understood now that I had to make it out of all those little corners that would have cornered me, actually. So we did that. And then after or nearly graduation time, we had uncertainties, and any other youth in South Africa can attest to this.
I'm sure.
Yeah, that you're like, what's going to happen when I graduate? Where am I going to go? Am I going to get stuck like everyone else? Because we have a lot of graduates sitting and not doing anything, which is a sad situation in the country. Around that time, I'm like, no, I have to try and get something prior. So I was there. I actually did 2 years of being a geological field mapping assistant in the university. So that's like a 10-day thing every other year for third year and fourth year students, where you like go to geological field trips, help them with all the geological structures and all that. And then I also applied to become a tutor. So I think I did 2 years of tutoring also, just because I was scared of that moment when it comes. So I thought maybe that would help. It actually did, because looking at where I am, it's very different. And they saw that. They saw that there's a potential if you've done so much, if you've been there and done that. So in the fortunate days when I was about to graduate, 2 of my friends who went to Esri South Africa for the unemployed youth training, right? So it starts off as a 1 week training where unemployed youth is called to come and have this. It's called ArcGIS Basic. You do basic training for a week. They give you GIS skills, because most of the people who are called are people who are already in the field, so they have an idea of what GIS is. So now they just need to get equipped with the necessary skills and Esri with the software and all that. So that's like the best place you can be for you to equip yourself.
I'm guessing it's going to be things like they'll tell you what a projection is. They'll tell you about geodatabases. They'll tell you about how to create mapping and build and understand real basic 101 stuff, but extremely important if as a foundation, right?
Yeah. So basically, in the field, I feel like most people overlook this, but in the field that we're in, the GIS field, the things that make up all the professionals is the basics. So the grassroots of your GIS applications, the grassroots of your databases, the grassroots of actual projection, that's like a very big thing. Because now your data can't work without projections. Now you have your datums. Now you need to define your data. You need to define your projections too. So all these little elements that add up, even creating a basic map, because it all starts with a paper map before we actually go and now have all these dynamic maps where you can query your data and do all that. It all starts from zero. So all those basic things are what make up a professional. All of them are professionals because they have the basics in them and they actually make up the industry. So yeah, I think you're right in that regards, that the basic stuff that we learn and that basic course is not so basic, because that's actually the foundation of the professional. That 1 week of training really changed my life, because that's the 1 week when I went there after my friends told me, of course, and then I did some research and I'm like, oh, Esri. And then they have these beautiful stories about them on the internet. Everyone wants to be a part of Esri. Even clients are like, oh, you work at Esri. We love Esri. So it was a beautiful thing getting there and seeing the environment and seeing all the hands that come in together to make the place what it is. In that week, after, so I think around Wednesday, because it's like Monday to Friday, around Wednesday, I get a call up that, yeah, we want to interview you for our YES internship program, which is like for a year.
That's the YES, Y-E-S, right? Yeah. YES, exclamation mark.
Yeah, Youth Employment right. Service. So this program was actually announced by the president at some point. It's not only an Esri South Africa initiative. A lot of companies participate in this.
Understood.
Yeah. I can only speak for myself, obviously. I can only speak about Esri South Africa because that's where I am. And the mentorship there is beautiful. The access to the software. Because now, I think it becomes very different because Esri South Africa is a distributor of the software. So being in there and actually seeing all these things, because even now, if you ask me what field I am in, I can't necessarily tell you, because you work in municipality level, you work in the private sector, government, and then you have all these little niche industries in the side. I can't even necessarily say that this is the stuff that I'm focused on, because I focus on everything. Yeah, everything GIS in any industry, I've been a part of something like that. But on my part, I mostly prefer the mining stuff, the geology stuff, because that's like my background. I'm also trying to get to a point where I can tuck in together the two, have a GIS thing and consolidate it to the geology thing, you know, maybe have a master's degree in something like that and study further, and just to tie the two together, because it works so beautifully. There's one example that I can give to that effect, where they wanted to do a monitoring tool for, there was a dam that burst just recently, I think it was this year. It was a tailings dam. So that burst, and it caused a lot of casualties. Houses went down and all that. So now there's a GIS system with like a tailings facility system that like detects early warning system.
Sort of a monitoring system, that early warning, as you said.
Yeah, an early warning system that tells you that we might have a problem in this dam. That's a big thing in the industry.
For sure.
And now that ties the geology and the GIS aspects of my studies. So that's like very beautiful. That's like what I'm looking into at this point in time.
You mentioned this morning specifically Liesl, one of the trainers at Esri, as being foundational for your growth there. Tell me a bit about Liesl and how she helped you on your journey.
There's actually a very funny and good story at that effect. So I had a mentor who has recently left the company. His name is Luto Mbeki. So he worked hand in hand with Liesl. I worked with Luto so much that Liesl ended up taking me under her wing. So Luto threw me to Liesl at some point, because Liesl is like a tech lead in the company. So she's big. What happened was Luto just threw me there and then Liesl tugged me under. Even the smallest of problems, if you can understand, I come from a geology background, not so much a GIS one. So I have some GIS in me. I have GIS modules, but it's not to the effect of that I studied as a geography or GIS person, right? So to that effect, Liesl never hesitated. Every other 2 minutes I could go and say 1, 2, 3. And then even me getting the job was mostly recommendations from Liesl. So Liesl is very good at her job and she doesn't cease to give credit when it's due. So that's how she recommended me to our bosses, and she's like, hey, you know, I see the work he did. I gave him this much to do. He did it overnight, and it was like beautiful. He gave us the data structures we wanted. He gave us a good report, because I think it was a gap analysis thing where you analyze gaps in an organization. Basically, you're like, oh, what data are you missing? If you want to go to the field, what can you collect? So I did that report, and then Lisa was like, no, I've worked with you on a couple of projects, and I think this is beautiful. Then she sent that email. So I think that's why I even mentioned it this morning. She played a very pivotal role in getting me where I am today. And I felt like that needed to be appreciated.
I ask you because not only to recognize that contribution that she's made to yourself, she's helped me endlessly as well. And I thought, oh, it's so nice to hear that you're at the beginning of your journey.
Yeah.
Me, I'm towards the back end of mine. And I'm certainly no GIS expert, but that support that I've had that you're getting, it's very special. And I think it speaks about the values that we're seeing demonstrated.
And like I said, she's the gift that keeps giving.
That's special.
Yeah, so if you are attesting to that fact too, it means that it's actually a real thing. And we actually see a footprint in the company. I see it on a daily basis because I work with her hand in hand. So every other day, there's always some growth. There's always elements of giving you knowledge. She's always sending you resources. Please look at this. Please go and do this research. There's this new update on Survey 123. There's this new update on dashboard. You can do this. You can't do this. I think that's the best of it.
I'm going to ask you the interview classic question. In 5 years' time, where does Buyo Nevari see himself within the whole GIS tapestry?
It's something that I've been thinking about quite a lot. And I think the industry is open. If there's one thing that I have seen in the few years I've been in the industry, it's very open and it's there for the taking. So that's why I said that I even want to couple my geology with my GIS, because I see that it's an open field and anybody can get in it and anybody can like get it. In 5 years' time, I'm thinking I'll be somewhere in a yacht and sipping on margaritas. Okay, I'm joking.
But I think you're doing that in 5 minutes' time as well.
5 minutes' time. Okay, but on a serious note, I feel like I would go into consultancy because I've seen it's an open space and it takes all the effort. All of us can contribute to this. GIS is not a niche industry. GIS expands to the broader general criteria of life. You go to banking, you go anywhere, you still get your GIS skills. So there's no GIS stops at mining. That's why I think in 5 years' time, I'll be in consulting and making something out of it and making an impact. That's like the biggest thing, because as I said in the morning, I'm a village child. So all the hands that made me, I would like to give a few other hands outside and do the best I can to empower the youth, empower the industry, and just show up for humanity. Everybody who was just like me, who was like their 20s, they're scared of what's going to happen, scared of who's going to show up for me, because that's the most important question. I don't have anybody in my corner. I don't have any uncle or a cousin. I think the first step, just take the first step, take that leap of faith, go out there, interact with people, show up in spaces and invade spaces. Go into spaces that you don't even feel comfortable in. Say something. You have a lot to say. So that's like the best I can give to anyone. Because if I have seen feather, it is by standing on the shoulders of giants.
Buyo, this morning you spoke beautifully and you've continued that conversation and beautiful reflection on your journey so far. From my side, sir, all the best. Keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you.
I'm really looking forward to seeing where you go and how your career develops. I hope we get a chance to speak again in the months to come. Most importantly, look after yourself. Behave tonight. Enjoy it.
I'll try.
And your parents and your friends, family must be very proud of you.
I know they are. My mom sent me a text and my dad saw a status about it takes a village to raise a child, screenshot that I had. He was so happy. It's like, indeed, it does take a child. And it did take a village to raise me. It took so many hands. And that's why I'm even eager to like go out there and help as many people as I can.
Make it happen. Enjoy.
Thank you. Thank you.
Welcome, Nsovo Maluleke, the winner of Esri's hackathon. Thank you so much for joining me this afternoon. How are you keeping? And what a beautiful day. What a beautiful view.
It is beautiful. It is beautiful. And thank you for having me. Such a great day. My name is Nsovo Pearl Maluleke, and I'm coming from the University of Johannesburg, and I'm completing my master's in sustainable urban planning and development. So the hackathon was more of a get together with other participants to bring out ideas on how we can solve social issues and also bring social justice to communities, and by using GIS to come up with the solutions as to how we can go about that.
Now, you say it was a collaboration. Were you collaborating with fellow students, or were you working with practitioners in the GIS field? How did you go about, and what was the problem that you were trying to solve with your GIS solution?
My lecturers at the University of Johannesburg, Prof. Gumbo, Prof. Mosakwa, Prof. Tuli, to mention the least, were part and parcel of my idea to come up with a waste management solution using GIS. So I had to come up with a solution that is sustainable and also equally distributed among all communities, from rural, informal, and also metropolitan cities.
Any particular cities that you worked with?
Yes, I was working on the city of Johannesburg. This is because I'm familiar with the place. I wanted to do it at Thekwini because they have a lot of data on their website. But then it was unfortunate. I've never been to Durban. I've never been to KZN. So the most case study that I could use was the city of Johannesburg, yeah.
Did you find that the officials and the departments there were very receptive to your ideas, or were you working more through the data that was available through other portals and open data and so forth?
Yeah, I didn't meet the officials, but then I was using the data that is online on their website. And also census came very handy in having to know more about the population and also the growing urbanization of the city, so that we can see the histograms and then to also track down how the population is growing. Yeah.
So let's say I'm an official from the city of Joburg. But so if I was a city official and you're saying, Pete, here's my app or my approach, what would you be saying? Pete, this is what it can do. I'm asking you to buy it, or I'm asking you to adopt it as part of your routine management, or what would the pitch be to the official, even the mayor of Joburg? let's say.
Okay. Pete, the idea is to distribute services equally, because we tend to forget rural areas when we are developing, when we are planning. So the idea is to distribute the services equally. So the idea now is to come with an alternative of the transport routes, which transport routes we're going to use for waste collections, and also participate with the people that stay in townships also and rural areas, and also the people that are in urban areas, to say, what can we do for you ongoing? And then also to map out everything to see the areas that we're lacking, and then to come up with more strategies in the future to say, now, this is how we're going to move forward when it comes to sustainable development and planning, and also urban design.
When you talk about waste management and the waste collection routes, are you talking about those that would typically be done by pick it up, or is that more by the informal waste collectors?
This is the ones that will be for pick it up. And this is because now we're coming up with strategies to reduce the carbon emissions. So this is why we were to say that services have to be distributed equally and spatially. We came up with a GIS tool, an analysis, which was used online tessellation. If I'm
pronouncing. Now you're using those fancy words that these Esri guys like, or the GIS guys, they like tessellation.
Yes.
Very impressive.
So we did the analysis to say, now everything now is divided equally, because there are 7 regions and then 5 pick it up landfills. Now we can say that, okay, now a certain population from a certain region can use, maybe rather say region B, even if they're from A, because the one that is region B is closer to them than the one that is at region A.
Understood.
Yeah.
Understood. How much have you enjoyed the last couple of days? I think this is day 3. I keep getting my days 2 and 3. How have you enjoyed it? What have you seen? What has made you, inspired you?
Oh, I've met a lot of people. I've met a lot of people, especially you.
That's nice.
And people from each and every community and each and every sector, and having to come up with ideas and everything interlinking with each other. It's more interesting on what we can do for the future when it comes to spatial planning and development and creating sustainable smart cities. So having to meet everyone from all these departments, from all these organizations, it's been such a great experience, yeah.
Has it surprised you, the diversity of people who are using GIS, the different departments, the private sector, different people from different backgrounds? It surprises me, but I want to hear from you. You're much younger than me. You're growing into this.
I wasn't much surprised because when we were doing undergraduate at UJ, the lecturers would come at us and talk about transportation. Another one would come up and talk about law. Another one will talk about economics. Another one will talk about waste management and all of this. So me having to be here and meeting all these people from different sectors, I've already been warned about that this is what you're going to meet in the future. So it's been like that, yeah.
Let's talk about your future. You've already achieved something today. And again, congratulations again today on your hackathon win.
Thank you so much.
What does the future hold? What is it you want to do? What is it you see yourself doing once your master's is complete?
I want to continue with my PhD, hopefully.
Oh, the doctor will see you now, Malaleke. Dr. Malaleke will see you now.
Yes. Yeah? I still want to do research more on GIS and remote sensing. I also want to continue with Urban Decay initiatives. And then also I want to formally practice urban design and planning, but in a sustainable way, because right now we're moving into everything sustainability. So that is what I want to do in the future.
Well, I can't wait to see how it turns out for you. I wish you all the very best and Sovo. And thanks for taking time out of your day, a beautiful day, as we said.
Beautiful day.
You're going to enjoy the rest of it and enjoy and celebrate your achievements. Well done.
Thank you so much.
So now Pearl and I have been joined by Tsidi Murabi. Tsidi, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. How are you?
I'm okay. Thanks for inviting me.
Oh, what a pleasure. I mean, you really inspired me this morning with your STEAM for Kids initiative. I'm looking forward to hearing about that. Before we get into and explaining what led you into that space, tell me a bit about yourself and the work with Ginini Consulting.
Okay. Tsidi is from Tembisa. I was born and bred in Tembisa in Gauteng. And I went to school in Tembisa. Then I have BCom Informatics. And I have lots of IT certificates to back up my degree. And I also have honors in risk management. And one of the things that I've done lately is a data science as well as AI in 4IR, in the 4IR space. Ginini Consulting is an IT company, which is the mother of STEAM for Kids, because the company started as a software development house as well as IT training. And then we saw a need to include the kids. And then when we included the kids, then we said we'll call it STEAM for Kids with an A in between, because whatever that we want to do, we want to make sure that there's element of art in it. So STEAM stands for Science, Technology, Engineering, Art and Maths. The programs that we do, we make sure that kids are able like to create things, hence the art element. We are pushing the agenda of innovation.
I'm looking here. I think this beautiful bookmark that you guys have been distributing today. And it says here, we do coding, robotics, mobile app and web development, VR, 3D, 4D tech. I mean, this is amazing. And this is for kids, right?
Yes.
What does it look like? For those who haven't had the benefit of you know, Pearl and I have seen what you've done today, some of the demos you were doing, some of the robotics. But for those who haven't had the benefit, who are listening to this, tell us about what they would have seen today.
Today, they would have seen a robot that was created by grade 9 students. There's also another one that was created by the grade 11 students. So basically what we do, if there's something that needs to be printed, we will teach them the technology of 3D printing so that they can design and then print their models. Then from there, they will put in their microcontrollers and code the microcontrollers to make sure that whatever that they have printed is now turned into a robot. So it's more of saying that they know they don't need to get printed robots or pre-bought robots where they just do the assembling. So they started from scratch. If they don't 3D print, there's something that we call cardboard box, mechatronics. So with cardboard box, they create electronics or mechatronics using the boxes or recyclable material. The idea is for them to clean up the environment at the same time creating things that are usable for them, and they can learn the electronics and the mechanisms in terms of how they work, as well as engineering.
So these things are cheap in terms of the componentry and the raw materials that go into it. And then, of course, you're adding the intellect and the knowledge for the kids. And what are the results that you're seeing? I mean, again, just remind me for my own benefit, I didn't go through the South African schooling system, but what are we talking about in relation to the age groups that we're talking about here?
The age group is from the age of 5 upwards until the grade 12s. And with the age of 5, what we are teaching them is that they will understand what is electrical engineering from an early age, because with coding and robotics that has been introduced by government, it actually teaches the grade 1 how to do an electrical circuit. Grade 2, they are adding another bulb. Grade 3, they're actually now using the solderless boards, which is a breadboard. So they will do their own things there without using a soldering iron. Then at grade 4, they are now introduced to the microcontrollers and microprocessors, the pulleys, the gears, and all of that. So it's more of a build-up. By the time they're in grade 9, they have a skill that they've got under their belt. They can start using their skill, whether it's using embedded systems, which is electronics, or using coding and robotics to do modeling, or 3D printing as creating designs and actually selling those designs to other people. Because with 3D printing now, UJ has actually introduced 3D printing that prints houses. That was earlier this year. A house can actually be printed in 24 hours, you know, which is, again, it will help in terms of the backlog of houses.
TD, how much is one of these? How much does that cost? Because I guess the one thing is to say, wow, that sounds amazing. Is it cheaper than or the similar cost to a normal housing development? Have you looked at the economics behind that?
The housing development, I haven't. But with our programs, they're very reasonable. Like now on the 4th of November, we are starting with introducing Python program, which is an 8-month program. And per month, the parents will be paying at least 450 per month. And the kids will be attending that for the next 32 weeks, the 8-month program. So what we teach them there, we'll teach them about the self-driving car, face recognition technology. We teach them about cybersecurity because they need to know how to behave in the workspace, in the cyberspace. We also teach them how to create a chatbot. And then when we talk about the self-driving car, I always say to them that they must look at it and say, we do have a self-driving car now, but when it comes to South Africa, it must be localized. So localization in this case, we are talking that car must be taught, that's now artificial intelligence, that car must be taught to identify potholes. I mean, we are in South Africa.
Of course.
It must also be taught that sometimes if there's load shedding, you might find that the traffic lights are actually just black. So it must be taught that that's the possibility. It means now it must learn that a stop sign and a black robot or a flashing red robot is equals to a stop sign.
I just wanted to check one other thing that really inspired me, and particularly the work that I've done in and around communities in informal settlements and those where there's a high risk of fire. Mm. You talked about the fire sensor as being one of the things. Can you just tell us a bit about that? And then Pearl, I'd love to hear what your thoughts are on this.
Okay. With the programs that we do, we are deliberate in terms of the programs that kids, they will never ever forget. Instead, they will be innovative. They will work. So we are introducing the baseline so that they can be creative enough to use them. So with the smoke detector, that's something that they will code and say how much distance they want between a house or with the smoke that will be coming in. What is it in terms of meters? When does the siren needs to go, which is the buzzer? And in that case, that's the problems that we have, whether it's fire or smoke or any program that will touch the communities. We introduce them to that so that they can be innovative and come up with better ideas and say, okay, fine, now we have this. How do we now implement it and make sure that it runs? And then obviously, after they have done that, we give them an idea to say, now you need to take this program that you have done and integrate it with our emergency services so that it's not only ends here that you are leaving your shack, but it at least send a signal to the emergency services to say there's a fire somewhere.
So localized solutions dealing with real challenges on the ground
that
our communities are faced with.
Yes.
This is fantastic, TD. I must say, I'm sitting here with a big smile on my face because I think this is really, again, it's where the rubber hits the road, right? This is the really exciting. One of the things that you also talked about this morning, I mean, we've all got them. We love our cell phones. We know they get damaged. You talked about the cell phone repairs and again, the kids helping out with that. Tell me a bit about that.
Okay. So basically what we do, we introduce kids to cell phone repairs from the age of 10. And we are also introducing them to laptop and desktop repairs so that they know how these things need, because we are building kids who are skilled. we need to make sure that they can do things for themselves. They don't need to outsource or take it somewhere. They can even open their own businesses as young as they are.
Young entrepreneurs fixing young the cell phone. Because I mean, I always thought this thing is broken. It's broken. You throw it in the bin. You're telling me no.
No, you can't. You can't throw it away. Those kids, let's say maybe if we went to Deep Sloot and we taught kids there, then it means you can take your cell phone to Deep Sloot and they will be able to do troubleshooting and test your phone and tell you what the problem is and fix it for you.
Again, astonishing. Pearl, sorry, I've been hogging the space. Away you go.
Okay, thank you. I'm just interested mostly on the recyclable material that you mentioned. It's such a great initiative when it comes to the urban design sector, because right now, because we're moving to the sustainable city planning and urban design. So I feel like what she just said now, we can use it in like a bigger sector to implement strategies that would have to deal with the social challenges that informal settlement mostly, and also the rural settlements. Because we also had, like I said earlier on, that we also have to make room for them. And also to ask, the one that you just mentioned now, the latest one, if it's so big to manage a metropolitan city, what challenges do you think the urban planning sector could have in implementing that in the public sector mostly?
I don't think it will be a challenge. Remember when we do these small projects using the microcontrollers, we are actually opening a can of worms to say what else can we do, because we are just introducing them. We are giving them a baseline. And then when we deal with the bigger things, our model will change in terms of the components that will be used. There's a fit for that because it's addressing the challenges that we're experiencing now. And they will have to come on board and support the initiative, even if it can be just a pilot somewhere. But they must check if it's working. And if it does work, it must be rolled out, because then we'll be saving lives.
Are you working with any of the municipalities or any of the government departments? Who, if anybody, have you been approaching in relation to this amazing initiative, STEAM?
Okay, for now, I'm actually working with Gauteng Legislature, not a service provider per se, a stakeholder.
Stakeholder, yes. Sure.
So they will invite me when they have kids that are visiting the legislature, so that I can also show them about the possibilities of using technology to be able to sustain themselves. And they will introduce me to different people that I need to interact with, whether it's the schools or the unemployment youth, and so that I can give them courage in terms of what are the possibilities that they can do. Even though they are not in the science and technology space, there's a room for them. Because when we talk about 3D printing, anyone can actually use a 3D printer. If you are in designing space, you can actually design your own chandeliers. You can design everything, the windows, whatever that you want to design, you can design and print. If you are in fashion, you can design your own earrings, shoes, and just design whatever, the chairs, giving hope and seeing that there are possibilities. The only thing that they need to learn is the technology. And if I can give you a brief background about myself, when I grew up, I did, in fact, in matric, I did history, geography, and maths, and geography and biology. I never did maths. And then I moved, I went to a technical college, I did accounting. And then I moved, I went to UNIS, and I told them that I want to do IT. Then I did not qualify, but I waited until I qualified, I can get the conditional exemption. Then I applied for that. After, I was inspired by my brother who was in IT. He was making money, and I thought to myself, maybe I should just join the club. And then, but he advised me and say, when you do IT, make sure that you go the software route, not the hardware route, because that's where money is. And there are lots of opportunities in the software space. So the things that I'm doing now, and as UNISA, it's a distance learning education. It's actually self-taught. It means even the degree that I have, it's self-taught because I did it myself. And everything that I'm doing that is related to 4IR and all of that is because as a person who's in IT space, you need to keep up with the technologies. You need to do whatever that is happening now. You can't be old age and say, no, I've done Delphi, then Delphi, it's fine. Delphi doesn't exist now, you know.
Is Delphi a language?
It's a language.
Are you impressed? I'm a town planner. And
okay. Yes, it's a language, an old language. Yes.
TD, again, inspiring stuff. And again, I think it's that idea of the future and saying, you know, right now in South Africa, obviously we're looking for hope. We're looking for signals and for particularly our youth. We know that there's a high percentage of unemployment in our, in our. What you're talking about here is a conduit, a straight line to saying there are things that can be done at a reasonable and affordable level, but in terms of the intelligence, the thinking is different to when I was growing up in the 70s and 80s. It's a long way removed from that. This is surely an exciting space going forward.
Yes, it is. Because the other thing, like I grew up in that age group as well. I'm 49, by the way. But that does not stop me from learning new things. I remember when Metaverse was introduced, I did not sleep that night because I understood what Metaverse was. And my daughter was not impressed with me because she says, Mommy, you shouldn't be happy about this. Because I said to her, I see opportunities. I mean, if people can go into a meeting and be avatars, it means these people, they need to pick up clothing and wear certain type of clothes to be avatars. It depends how you want to present yourself in a meeting. And then I even showed her, I created a 3D immersive school so that they can all be avatars, enter the school and experience what Metaverse is. I know it's still out there. People don't get it, but I do.
Fantastic. Have you had a chance to speak to Pearl about some of her hackathon efforts that led to her winning the award this morning?
Yes, I have. I have. And I'm looking forward to chow that 30K with her.
Oh, so, I forgot there was prize money. Eh?
There was prize money.
You must keep it all to yourself.
And even the program that she came up with, I must say, it's brilliant. You know, she deserves the prize. Yes.
Tsidi, I can't thank you enough for your time. You've inspired me today completely, the whole STEAM for Kids initiative. I really hope that the listeners have a chance to check you out. I see here you're on Facebook as well as Instagram.
Yes.
Just maybe wanted to say what those streams are or those feeds.
Yes. Oh, for the Instagram one, that will be STEAM_4 as a number, then kids. And then for Facebook, it's a STEAM for Kids Coding Club. So that's where they can follow us and see the programs that we do. And if our podcast goes out before the 4th of November, they can actually register their kids for the 8-month program of Python.
And they can do that through Instagram or Facebook?
They can do that through our website.
Ah, okay.
Yes, they can do through our website, which is www.steamforkids.co.za. And it's actually the one that is popping up now because that's what we are promoting. They can register there. And the class is actually online. So we are open to every kid in the world who wants to register and learn as much as they can do that. So our classes are normally on Saturday. I must say it's Saturday at 7 o'clock, but 6:45, you can hear kids asking for me and say, ma'am, are you there? Because they're always looking forward to this class. And their parents will say when they go to school on weekdays, they have to be waking up. So it shows that they don't want to be taught other things. They will prefer to be taught STEAM programs. I'll give you an example with my child. I once asked him, he's 13 years old. I asked him if he has to change the subject at school, which one will he replace? He said he will get rid of LO because LO, it will teach them the things that they know. And they have taught them it's fine. Whatever that they know, it's okay. Others, they will learn by themselves. I said, what about history? He said, no, history we can't change because when you look at history, everything has history behind it. So he looks at history from innovative point of view, not from a political point of view, which is a good sign. Maybe there is many of them out there who think like that.
Tsidi, more strength to you. You're giving hope. You're doing incredible work. I should have said, you've brought a box with you. If we get into this box, I think we'll be here for the next 3 hours.
Yes.
But hopefully we can come back to this. Love to hear maybe on the flip side of your program what the observations were on that over that length of time and period. But good luck to you. Pearl, thanks for staying with us and talking. It was lovely to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
All the best. And to both of you, enjoy tonight. Enjoy the evening.
Okay. Thank you for inviting us.
We hope you enjoyed this content of the Talking Transformation podcast. Please feel free to give us feedback via our Twitter platform. That's at TalkingTransfo and the number 1. Or alternatively, via our email address, TalkingTransformation101@gmail.com.
Thanks and recognition also to Tribal Need for allowing us to use their track, Flags, as our introductory and closeout music on this podcast.